Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and we're at the International Eastern Wine Competition in the Finger Lakes in New York. And today I'm talking to Anna Catherine Mansfield, who's a professor of enology at Cornell University, and which is the fancy way of saying that she knows more about grapes most of us have never heard of than anybody else. Thank you for doing this, Anna. I appreciate it very much.
Certainly. It's a pleasure.
So just real quickly, because I know I get confused about this, what's the difference between an enologist and a viticulturalist?
Well, enologists get locked in the cellar. We have no suntan, and they bring us the grapes. Usually we just kind of shove them in the door, and then we work with them from there. And viticulturists get to stay outside in the sunshine all season and work with the grapes. So I kind of handle grape chemistry, the microbiology of fermentations, anything that happens once the grapes come in the cellar door.
And actually, what I did want to talk to you about, because one of the reasons I enjoy judging this competition is that I get to taste a whole lot of wine made from grapes that are not Cabernet, Chardonnay, and Merlot. And I know that that's kind of very close to your heart, kind of what you do. And there's some new grape varieties that you've actually had something to do with starting. Is that the fair way of describing it?
I guess, yeah. I kind of fell into working with grape breeders when I started at the University of Minnesota in 2001, and I helped develop, they've released four cold hardy wine grapes, Frontenac, Gris, La Crescent, and Marquette, all of which are cold hardy to negative 36, negative 40. So great. At 40, it's the same thing. But yes, I helped get those launched in my 7 years in Minnesota, and then since I started at Cornell about a year and almost a half ago now, I work with Bruce Reich, who is the great breeder there, who's recently released things like Valdon Muscat, Noiré, and Pinot Noir, his three most recent releases.
So something like a cold hardy grape, which you need in Minnesota because they do have freezes and snow. Mm-hmm. You talk a little bit, and remember, one of the things I'm famous for on the blog is keeping everything in English.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about how one develops a grape so that at 0 degrees Fahrenheit it won't die?
Sure, yeah, for the cold hardy, the trick is really choosing the right parents. So to go into a little bit of terminology to talk about this, but I'm sure we can do it. Most traditional wine grapes, sure, your listeners know, are Vitis vinifera, and those are not cold hardy. Like the coldest hardy one is Riesling, which is cold hardy to, I think, -5 Fahrenheit on a good day. So we start with Vitis riparia, which is the wild riverbank grape. There are actually several different species of wild grapes in North America, but it's the one that goes, its range goes well up into Canada. So absolutely cold hardy in Minnesota, as well as northern New York and New England. So we breed that with vinifera and with other hybrids, other species, so you end up with an interspecific hybrid that eventually, after several generations, expresses the best of each of the parents. So you get the good wine chemistry, the good flavors, things that we look for in a wine from the Vitis vinifera, and you get the cold hardiness and also disease resistance, which is a great thing, from Vitis riparia. So Frontenac, in addition to being cold hardy, is bulletproof. There are very few diseases that affect it, which is not the case in vinifera.
Right. So how long does it take to do something? I mean, you know, a human being might have to be pregnant for 9 months. If you're breeding, and I don't do enough with roses or tomatoes, but I mean, how quick is it? And do you have to wait seasons or?
Well, it's quicker than apple trees, but not as quick as, say, potatoes. Grapes are weeds, they grow pretty quickly, but it's about a year each time. And a grapevine takes, you only get to breed once a year. And a grapevine takes about 3 to 4 years before it produces fruit, and we need to make wine for 5 or 6 or 10 years in a row before we know whether it consistently makes good wine. So we usually end up, on average, 20 years from the time the first frost is made until the time that there's a commercial release. So you only get a few in your lifetime. Yeah.
So that's actually a pretty big deal, the stuff you did in Minnesota.
It's a big deal, but I have to stress that I wasn't the breeder. I was just the one who tested the wines and made sure they made it.
So they've been part of a project like
that? Yes, I was part of it. Yes. Okay. It was exciting.
All right, now we have to answer the question, which I'm sure everybody is wondering. Why do we care if we can grow grapes in Minnesota?
It's because it's in Minnesota.
Well, and the reason, and I want to make this clear, because this is part of why I'm interested in regional wine and why I'm interested in local wine, and this ties in very nicely, which is why I wanted to talk to you. And so we're looking at it from your perspective. You're looking at grapes not as this great wine thing that everybody goes around and they're sniffing a cork and all of that, but you see grapes as an agricultural product?
In many ways they are. I mean, especially in the Midwest, where we're seeing, prices dropping in commodity crops like soybeans and corn, and dairy farmers are having trouble. you get a whole lot more per acre or per ton for grapes than you do for any of these crops. It's a lot more hands-on work, but we've seen in Minnesota and other parts of the Midwest that it's a good way to diversify and kind of keep the family farm. When farmers often can't do that. The same holds true in northern New York and also in Vermont.
So it's really about you're growing soybeans or corn or winter wheat in the Midwest, and you're not making any money off of it, and you don't, and you want to keep the family farm together, and so grapes give you a chance to do that.
Indeed, it's kind of like a CSA farm, but CSA is the way that special farmers can continue to farm. It's a similar concept.
So what are you working on now here? Is it more research on the cold hardy grapes, the ones you mentioned previously?
Well, I'm a jack of all trades kind of here. We have two enologists, one who is very much into wine microbiology, the other is very much a wine chemist, and because I have an extension component, I do more applied projects, so I try to answer questions that are immediate. So we're working on, for instance, right now, tannin additives, the best way to deal with those, because nobody really knows yeast assimilable nitrogen, when to best measure that. But also, we're continuing to work with a grape breeding here, and oddly enough, with the cold hardy grapes, we're putting together a collaborative project with the University of Minnesota, Iowa, Vermont, Connecticut, and I believe a couple, maybe Michigan, a few other groups. We're trying to put together a big USDA project that we hope will get funded in order to study the impacts of these new grapes, because they've effectively pushed the northern border of grape variety further north. I mean, Vermont is blooming, Minnesota is blooming, we're getting wineries in northern New York. It's a whole new agritourism, agribusiness area. So we just need to, you know, the grapes are 10 years old, not 1,000 like Pinot Noir or several hundred like Cabernet. So we do a lot of winemaking, test yeast, test parameters to see what the best aromas and flavors are that we can get out of these grapes and how we're going to make the wine next.
All right, so people, I'm sure when you explain to them what you do for a living, they go, well, why do we need anything besides Cabernet? I like Cabernet. And what do you say to them?
Well, you know, Cabernet, I guess I would say that if you think of it in a more European way, Cabernet does very well in some regions, and it expresses the terroir of those regions very well. It does not express the terroir of, say, New York, specifically Riesling, or Minnesota, where we feel like Frontenac or something else does. So if you like Cabernet, that's fine, drink Cabernet. If you're from a different region, it makes sense to try the wine from that region as well. Some of them are really interesting.
Oh, that's it. See, regional wine. Taste the regions. Taste the wines of the region. See, it's all very simple. We're not even getting into that. It's all about drinking one beer with. Well, listen, thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate it. This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. May your glass always be full, and may you always enjoy who you're drinking wine with. Thank you very much. Until next time.